Last time we started with Joshua 15, and we saw the tribe of Judah receive their inheritance in the promised land. We had out the handout from a while back that showed that they were in a very large area. They had a larger portion. Simeon's area is shown within the land of Judah, but that actually came later. Initially, they got it all, and they went from the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea over to the Mediterranean Sea, and then they went southwest down to very nearly to Egypt. Caleb, who's from the tribe of Judah, had a request that he get the area that Anakin was in, and we had seen that in the previous week too. It was restated here as Judah was allotted their portion, and that it was in south central Judah. Caleb asked for the area that included the town of Kiriath Arba. Arba was the father of Anak, which were the giants, and it would later become called Hebron. And he drove out the three sons of Anak and then went next door to Debir, previously Kiriath-Sepher. And Caleb offered a prize for the one that would take Debir, and that was to the daughter, his daughter Aksa, as his would be given as a wife to the person that could take that. Othniel did. He was a younger son of Caleb's brother. And so she was given to him as a wife. And she asked Othniel to ask Caleb for a field, which he grants that. And when Aksa, Caleb's daughter, comes to him and Caleb sees her, he says, "What do you want?" And she says, "I'd ask for a blessing. We've given us a field. That is a blessing, but we want water to use in the field." So Caleb gives her springs, both upper and lower. And the cities granted to Judah in the inheritance were listed in various forms, and we believe there were over 100 of them. But they were unable to displace the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. They were Canaanites that were there, and that remained a problem. After Joshua dies, we'll see that over in the book of Judges, and I say see it, given time, and we may not have the time. I want to look at some of the parallels in the book of Judges because there's some really good information there, but we would see there that Judah would eventually drive out the Jebusites, but, and we're going to be going into this today, when Benjamin gets their proportion, the town of Jerusalem actually winds up in Benjamin's area, and they have to retake the city. They try, they fail, and actually it won't be until David captures the city of Jerusalem and then would subsequently make it the capital of Israel that they are successful in taking care of putting Jerusalem under their control. And then David, of course, has his capital there for 33 years. In Joshua 16, we saw the sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, and you can see that on the map again. They had one area that was divided by them. Ephraim got the area that had Canaanites and Gezer. He did not drive them out, meaning the tribe did not drive them out, but they did put them into forced labor over time. In Joshua 17, Manasseh gets an allotment. There are 12 divisions within that allotment. One goes to a family whose heritage came from Makar, firstborn of Manasseh, and he was a great warrior, and so they were granted an allotment of their own, and the area they got contained Gilead and Bashan. And then there was another allotment to the daughters of Zelophehad. Remember, they're the ones that said, "Well, we don't have any brothers, but my father deserved an inheritance, so these women collectively were also given a portion in the area for Ephraim. I'm sorry, in Manasseh. And there were some cities listed there, but they were not able to clear out all the Canaanites, but as the tribe strengthened, they put them in forced labor. Now the sons of Joseph came to Joshua and complained, "We're numerous, we've been blessed of God, we need more space." And Joshua said, you're big. You have been blessed. There's a lot of you. Go clear the forest in the land of the Perizzites. And they came back and said, wait a minute. Those folks have iron chariots and horses. The hill country that includes this forest, it's not enough. And Joshua comes back to them and says, you will receive more than one portion. Go clear the hill country, the forest area. It's for you. Clear it to its furthest borders, and it will be yours. So he basically comes back and says, no, I told you what your additional portion is, and so that's yours to go take. Which takes us up to Joshua 18. And some of what we looked at in chapter 17, we will come back to see as we work our way through chapters 18 and 19 today, if all goes well. I want to start out by looking at the first 10 verses of Joshua 18. Excuse me. Then the whole congregation of the sons of Israel assembled themselves at Shiloh and set up the tent of meeting there, and the land was subdued before them. There remained among the sons of Israel seven tribes who had not divided their inheritance. So Joshua said to the sons of Israel, how long will you put off entering to take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you? Provide for yourselves three men from each tribe that I may send them, and that they may arise and walk through the land and write a description of it according to their inheritance. Then they shall return to me. They shall divide it into seven portions. Judah shall stay in its territory on the south, and the house of Joseph shall stay in their territory on the north. You shall describe the land in seven divisions, and bring the description here to me. I will cast lots for you here before the Lord your God. For the Levites have no portion among you, because of the priesthood of the Lord is their inheritance. Gad and Reuben and the half-tribe of Manasseh also have received their inheritance eastward beyond the Jordan, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them. Then the men arose and went, and Joshua commanded those who went to describe the land, saying, go and walk through the land and describe it and return to me. Then I will cast lots for you here before the Lord in Shiloh. So the men went and passed through the land and described it by cities and seven divisions in a book. And they came to Joshua to the camp at Shiloh. And Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord. And there Joshua divided the land to the sons of Israel according to their divisions. And so we're seeing here at the beginning of this chapter, they have previously been down at Gilgal by Jericho, had kind of become their headquarters. And now they're moving up to Shiloh, and the whole congregation is there, and they set up the tabernacle, which is a good thing for them to do. So they now have their center of worship. They have the presence of God shown there in the Holy of Holies, and things are starting to get some roots down. And it says the land was subdued before them. What that means is everything was peaceful. There were no longer these armies gathering against them, because previously they had the kings of the south had worked to get ready to go to try to drive the Jews out. That didn't work so well. Very quickly, Joshua and company had defeated those kings of the south. And the kings of the north came together, and they had a massive army. They had also chariots and horses, and they came to drive Joshua and company out. And once again, God gave them the victory. God was fighting for them. At one point, God was even taking lives more of the enemy than Joshua and his company was when they hailed down either stones or ice. We're not sure, but it was described as a hail. And so they're now kind of all, well, we defeated all those folks, and they're just kind of like the failure to launch kids, you know? They're all hanging around, and Joshua goes, what in the world are you doing? Why are you not yet going out and possessing the land? And so Joshua is still following Yahweh's command to allot these portions to the tribes so they can finish that task. And so now They're there at Shiloh. They're 9 miles north of Bethel, 20 miles north of Jerusalem. And interestingly, in the future, God is going to allow the Philistines to overrun Israel at Shiloh and there and take the Ark of the Covenant. In Jeremiah 7, it's called "This Humiliation of Israel" is used as an example, and it shows Yahweh's judgment of them. But at the moment, we've got seven tribes still there without division of land for their inheritance, and they're just hanging around. So Joshua says, quit procrastinating. You need to take possession of the land that Yahweh, the God of your fathers, has given to you. And so as he invokes Yahweh's promise to Abraham, they're ready to go. Joshua is ready for them to get out and get going. So here's his mechanism. 2.5 tribes have already been settled. Judah and the two portions of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. He says, okay, that's been done. So we've got half of Manasseh here and Ephraim and Judah. That's not going to be bothered, but you folks from the seven tribes, each of you bring in 3 men, and Joshua then sends them out as a collective team to survey the land, and I don't mean that with measuring, I mean that with their eyes, to see what's there, they're to write a description, and as they do it, they themselves are supposed to put the land in 7 portions. In other words, they're going to pick 7 tracts that seem fairly usable. One tribe could go here, one tribe could go there, another tribe could go here, but not necessarily will they pick the tribes that go there. That's going to be done when they bring these discussions back, and Joshua then is going to cast lots. Certainly Eleazar would be the one doing that probably, because that was a role for the high priest, but Joshua's going to oversee it. He's going to see that it gets done, so these tribes can know where their land is. They can go out and do what Yahweh called them to do, which was to clear out the people there and then establish themselves in whatever land area they get. And so he also reminds them again, remember, we don't have to worry about the Levites getting a portion because they already have their inheritance. Their inheritance is the priesthood of Yahweh, the care of the tabernacle and the worship. And also he mentions again that Gad, Reuben, and half of Manasseh have their tribes already east of the Jordan. So they go out on the mission that Joshua gave him. They look it over. They describe the land area by cities. They put it into 7 divisions, and they write it down in a book. I found that interesting because if you know from history, when we hear book, we think of a book. But they didn't use books like this. But book is the most common translation by far. It could be letter, document, scroll, any of those things. And so in verse 9, they come back to Joshua at Shiloh, and Joshua, using their description, cast the lots before Yahweh and divided the land, 7 areas to 7 tribes. So who decided what land area a given tribe would get? Yeah, this is the Sunday school answer moment. God. Yeah, God did that because it's through the casting of the lots that God is revealing his will for this to be done. It's not a moment of chance, but a moment of God directing what happens through these lots. So let's take a look at Joshua 18, and we're going to look at 11 through 14. There's a lot of text here about it went from here to here to this city to that city and included this. And we're not going to go over those details. Those details are a little bit lost to history in terms of some of this, but we get the general idea. So beginning in Joshua 18, I'm going to look at verses 11 through 14. Now the lot of the tribe of the sons of Benjamin came up according to their families, and the territory of their lot lay between the sons of Judah and the sons of Joseph. Their border on the north side was from the Jordan. Then the border went up to the site of Jericho on the north and went up through the hill country westward and ended at the wilderness of Beth Aven. From there, the border continued to Luz, to the site of Luz, that is Bethel, southward, And the border went down to Ataroth Adar, near the hill which lies on the south of lower Beth Horon. The border extended from there and turned round on the west side southward from the hill which lies between Beth Horon southward, and it ended at Kiroth Baal, that is, Kiroth Lirim, a city of the sons of Judah. This was the west side. And it keeps on going, and it's going to go on down to clear through verse 28. We have a couple more things we'll look at in there. But so they've got, if you look at the map, they've got this area that's between Judah and Ephraim Manasseh. Well, it looked before, as Judah and Ephraim Manasseh were getting their space, that space there tried carved out for Benjamin isn't mentioned. It's just kind of a blank. It says they kind of came together. And what we're seeing there is that as these 21 people went out and looked at the tribes, looked at the land that the tribes were in, they identified some areas that were near or in some of what was already apportioned in a small way. And so Benjamin winds up with that area that you see on the map. And this is kind of a rough map, obviously. It's not an exact science here. They're there between Judah and Joseph. You can see God's hand at work in one sense, that Benjamin was the second smallest tribe when they did the census back at the beginning of the book of Numbers. Also, something to remember is cities were a big deal, because that was a big part of how they described this. So if there was an area with a lot more cities in it, you might not get as much land mass, even though you got quite a few cities. Now, if you look down at verse 28, we'll just read it. So we're still talking about the apportionment to Benjamin. And Zelah, Haleph, and the Jebusite, that is Jerusalem, Gibeah, Kiroth, 14 cities with their villages. So they got Jerusalem out of the way this worked out. This is the inheritance of the sons of Benjamin according to their families. So now Benjamin has the tribe, has the city of Jerusalem, and that's going to become part of their responsibility. And I've already mentioned, and I hope we get a chance to go look at this over in Numbers, but Benjamin was not able to drive out the Jebusites, even though the tribe of Judah had for a period of time, but it didn't hold. Questions, comments so far? I'm going to try to keep us going through the apportionments so that we can get some of the key things out, but work our way through them fairly efficiently. That brings us to Joshua chapter 19. And I want to start out here. This is Simeon's portion. And we're going to read the whole thing for the territory of Simeon. So let me read verses 1 through 9. Then the second lot fell to Simeon, to the tribe of the sons of Simeon, according to their families, and their inheritance was in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Judah. So they had their inheritance, Beersheba, or Sheba, and Moladah, and Hazar Shual, and Bela, and Ezim, and El Otad, and Bethul, and Hormah, and Ziklag, and Beth Markaboth, and Hazar Susa, and Beth Leboeth, and Sherahin, 13 cities with their villages. Ain, Rimmon, and Ether, and Ashen, 4 cities with their villages. And all the villages were around these cities, as far as Baalath Beer, Ramah of the Negev. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Simeon according to their families. The inheritance of the sons of Simeon was taken from the portion of the sons of Judah, for the share of the sons of Judah was too large for them. So the sons of Simeon received an inheritance in the midst of Judah's inheritance. So what we see here is that Simeon gets this portion that's taken out of kind of a center part of where Judah had its land, and the scriptures are very clear, Judah had been given an apportionment that was too large. Well, what made it too large? Not enough people, you can go through a lot of things, but one of the responsibilities in receiving one of these inheritance portions was going ahead and being responsible to drive out the remaining Canaanite inhabitants. It's very possible that Judah was very willing to give up some of this land in order to get some help in driving out some of these folks. And if we get a chance to go over to Judges, I think we'll even see some of that. But don't forget where the original division that they're casting lots for came from. These 21 men had been sent out, and of course of their travels throughout the land of Israel, what would become the land of Israel, they obviously were a part of laying this out, because they came back with the seven portions. And so as they surveyed things, it became clear that Judah had more territory than was going to be wise. And so Simeon received territory down in this area. It's an interesting pairing if you think about the sons of Joseph, because Judah had emerged to some extent as one of the leaders of the of all the sons. He was willing to take responsibility for his own sin. And yet Simeon was one of the sons that Joseph was particularly upset with because of what they did when they were avenging their sisters being raped by one of the communities up there when they were in Israel before they made the move to Egypt. And so it's an interesting pairing. Simeon, if they were carrying out and living out the same kind of presence that their actual named father Simeon was, they probably needed some leadership around them, and Judah was a leader. And maybe more if we can get over into Judges, which might have to be the next time, depending on how this goes. Any questions so far?
I have a question. I'm looking at a map from Tape Life, and it shows Simeon in the, you know, the midst of Judah, but on the key, it says that these were the areas that were shared by Simeon and Judah. Were they shared?
Well, according to the text, I think Simeon was responsible in a landmass. One thing, and so wherever they had, they were going to be the tribe that would be held accountable for that area. Over in the book of Judges, what you see is Judah coming to Simeon at times and saying, come on, let's go do this, let's go do that. So they shared some responsibility or some, maybe not responsibility, they shared some joint efforts. For example, we would read over in the book of Judges, it's hard to ignore that because it's over there, although I plan to go through it separately. But when we get, if we get over there, when we get over there, when Jerusalem is overtaken by Judah, even though they weren't able to hold it, the path to that was Judah going to Simeon saying, come on, let's go take care of Jerusalem. Now, that would have been apparently before Benjamin was fully functional in that area. And later they would come in and take the lead at attempting that again and be the ones to actually try to do it on their own and fail. But that's about as far as I can go from the scriptures in answering that question. Good question. Other questions? And with Bill bringing that up, there's lots of maps you can look at that will have variations on what you see here. This is pretty much middle of the road, and obviously this doesn't give a lot of specifics, like showing you where towns are and some things like that. And in a little bit we will get to one of the cases where we'll add a little detail to this, but you can't go much further than generalities. We pretty much know the area they were in, but how do you draw it on a map and show super clarity and boundaries? It's really tough with the information we have at this time. Anything else right now? Well, let's look at Zebulun. I'm going to look at verses 10 through 16, which is the whole thing. Now, the third lot came up to for the sons of Zebulun according to their families, and the territory of their inheritance was as far as Sarid. Then their border went up to the west and to Maralah, and then it touched Dabbesheth and reached to the brook that is before Jokneam. Then it turned from Sarid to the east toward sunrise as far as the border of Chisloth-Tabor, and it proceeded to Dabarath and up to Japhia. From there it continued eastward toward the sunrise to Gath-Hepher, to Eth-Kazin, and proceeded to Rimmon, which stretches to Nea. The border circled around it on the north to Hanathathon, and ended in at the valley of Iphtael. Included also were Kata and Nahlal and Shimron and Idalah and Bethlehem, 12 cities with their villages. This was the inheritance of the sons of Zebulun according to their families with their cities and their villages. And so if we look at the map, we see Zebulun up here north of Manasseh, a little corner of it touching the way they drew this map to Manasseh, and then going on up to Naphtali and kind of sandwiched in the middle there. An interesting thing, and I like the way it says it. Now the third lot. So you can imagine them, they're meeting together with the leaders of the tribes. They're casting the lots. And so for whatever reason, this territory was the third one they allotted. And so it went to Zebulun. And so they received that general portion. And that I really didn't have a lot of other notes to make. And won't for several of these going down through here. The next one is Issachar. And the fourth lot, I'm starting in verse 17 through 23. The fourth lot fell to Issachar, to the sons of Issachar according to their families. Their territory was to Jezreel and included Chethaloth and Shunem and Hapharim and Shion and Anahatharath and Rabbeth and Kishion and Ebez and Remeth and Enganim and Enhadah and Beth Pazaz. The border reached up to Tabor and Shahuzamah and Bethlehemeth, and their border ended at the Jordan, 16 cities with their villages. This was the inheritance of the tribe of Issachar, according to their families, the cities and their villages. So you can see Issachar is sandwiched between Zebulun and Manasseh, which, by the way, I think we got a few more of these back there still if you didn't bring yours back. And so we really didn't learn a lot about Issachar, but they have 16 cities and villages. So there are villages around these cities, and that's what they received. In 1924 through 31, we see that Asher received their lot. And I'm going to read through 31. That's the whole thing. Now the fifth lot fell to the tribe of the sons of Asher according to their families. Their territory was, and I am not going to read it all. And there's a lot of cities listed there in verse 31. This was an inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Asher according to their families, cities, and villages. And so if we take a look, Asher got coastal land there along the Mediterranean Sea, running north and south, going up from that half-tribe of Manasseh up to the north. And then we get to Asher. Whoops, that's what we just did. Let me turn a page, and that'll work better. And then we get to Naphtali. They're sixth in Joshua 19, starting with verse 32. The sixth lot fell to the sons of Naphtali, to the sons of Naphtali according to their families. Their border was from Heleph, from the oak, in Zananin, and so on and so on. And there's really not anything there but the list of the cities, verse 39. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Naphtali according to their families, again, cities and villages. And so if you look at Naphtali, Naphtali is up there. There you can see some white areas, or maybe there one of them's a little blue on this one. But anyhow, down here, this is the Dead Sea, down at the lower one. And you get up here, this one up here is the Sea of Galilee. Well, look what's right next to the Sea of Galilee. It's the tribe of Naphtali. And what's interesting is it wasn't entirely within the borders, but it was mostly where Jesus did his Galilean ministry was in the tribe of Naphtali. Now, I don't know of any particular, there may be, but I don't know of any particular significance, but I found that to be interesting. I also want to look down at verse 47. Nope, sorry, I'm one ahead. Yeah, let's look at 40 through 48, and I will probably read all of that. This is the territory of Dan. The seventh lot fell to the tribe of the sons of Dan according to their families. The territory of their inheritance was Zorah and Eshetol and Ir Shemesh. And I'm not going to, but I do want to skip down to verse 47. In verse 47, the territory of the sons of Dan preceded beyond them, for the sons of Dan went up and fought with Leshem and captured it. Then they struck it with the edge of the sword and possessed it and settled in it, and they called Leshem Dan after the name of Dan their father. And then in verse 48 it goes to say this was the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Dan. So if you look here, you'll see that Dan's allotment was down here between Judah and Ephraim. And when it said in verse 47 that the territory preceded beyond them, that's kind of their idiomatic way of saying they were not able to subdue it. They weren't having the success they wanted at driving out the peoples that were there. And one thing they did as a result of that is they went up into the area of Naphtali, and on this map you see a little lake up there in the northern part of Naphtali, and north of there was a city that Dan went up there and overtook. And the name of that city was Leshem. And they were successful at taking that town. Now, that what they took was a town, not a territory, or maybe I should say a city. It seems like the code words here, when they say city, it probably was a fortified city. But it was more than just a village. It was an area of a center for the people in that area and was influential in the area. And they took that city, and some of them settled there, and they renamed it Dan. And so they didn't get a whole nother territory up in Naphtali, but they did take that city and claimed it as their own and named it Dan after their father. And they settled it. It says they struck it with the edge of the sword. What does that mean? What's that?
They killed them all.
Yeah, they cleaned it out. They did completely overtake that city, and they were disposing of the people. Go over to Judges chapter 1, verse 34. This we're going to go ahead and take a look at today in case we don't get back to it in a good time later. Oh, come on, fingers. Judges 1, 34. So this is a description of what Dan went through when it says the city preceded them. Then the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the valley. Yet the Amorites persisted in living in Mount Heres and so on and so on. But when the power of the house of Joseph grew strong, they became forced labor. The border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of Akrabim from Selah and upward. What you're seeing there are two statements about this hill country, which is what Ephraim and Manasseh were complaining about. These folks in the hill country are kind of tough. That's where they also had the forested area that Joseph had told them to take. And so when Dan got in that area, they were Amorites, which is one of the divisions of the Canaanites, descendants of Canaan. And they just didn't let Dan do what Dan was needing to do, which was to clear them out so they could have that whole area. And so that's when, as a result, they found their way up into Naphtali and took another city that they could have up there. Okay? Let's finish up Joshua 19, then we're going to go over and take a look at Judges. So Joshua 19, 49 through 51, this is, okay, all the apportionment's been done. It says, when they have finished proportioning the land for inheritance by its borders, the sons of Israel gave an inheritance in their midst to Joshua, the son of Nun, in accordance with the command of the Lord. They gave him the city for which he asked, Timnath-Serah, in the hill country of Ephraim. So he built a city and settled in it. These are the inheritance which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel distributed by lot in Shiloh before the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting. So they finished dividing the land. So they're done with it. Everybody's got their area. And the sons of Israel then gave an inheritance to Joshua. And when they did, he asked for the hill country of Ephraim, which Joshua was from Ephraim. And so he built a city and settled in it. Interestingly enough, he's in that same area that he told Ephraim, just go and take it. And so when he gets his chance, that's where he is in that same general area. And he built a city, he settled it. And if you look back at Numbers 14:30, let's just do that. Go back to Numbers 14:30. It's a simple statement, but we see the connection that's made with Caleb that it makes here. 14:30 says, surely you shall not come into the land. Whoops, I'm sorry. No, that's right. Surely you shall not come into the land which I swore to settle you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. And so this is that connection with Caleb. Caleb got the territory he wanted, pointed out it was promised by God, and Joshua also got the territory he wanted, but the sons of Israel were the ones that formalized that for Joshua. Verse 51, it says, and the apportionment's done. So we get a chance to see how all of that was put together. What's not done is the taking of all these lands and clearing out the people that God had commanded them to clear out. And there's a couple chapters in Judges that we ought to look at. Let's look at Judges 1. And we've read some of that. But let me first of all read verses 1 through 10 of Judges 1. Now it came about after the death of Joshua that the sons of Israel inquired of the Lord, saying, who shall I go up for us against the Canaanites to fight against them? The Lord said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand. Then Judah said to Simeon, his brother, come up with me into the territory allotted me, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I in turn will go with you into the territory allotted to you. So Simeon went with him. Judah went up, and the Lord gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hands, and they defeated 10,000 men of Bezek. They found Adoni-Bezek in Bezek and fought against him, and they defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. But Adoni-Bezek fled, and they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. Adoni-Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and their big toes cut off used to gather up scraps under my table as I have done, so God has repaid me. So they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died there. Then the sons of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it and struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. Afterward, the sons of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites living in the hill country and in the Negev and the lowland. So Judah went against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron formerly was Kiriath Arba, and they struck Sheshai and Ahiman and Talmai. So what do we see here in these first 10 verses here in Judges? Well, after Joshua dies, so we're kind of skipping ahead because that hasn't happened for us in the book of Joshua. But after Joshua dies, Israel inquired of the Lord. That is not just information about how they made their decisions. Actually, that's a pretty huge event. It seems as though when the Israelites would inquire of the Lord, a couple of things would happen. One is they would get clear direction. And the second was, in their direction, God would tell them how he has made arrangements for them to be successful in following his direction. And when you see the comments about the tribes going out to do things, one of the things you don't see so many times in the rest of the book of Joshua, and even if you kept reading in Judges, you don't see this statement. But here's Judah, the one that showed leadership as a man. Now his tribe, his descendants are here. And so there's an inquiry made. And the inquiry is, who goes first? And God says, it's going to be Judah. Lord said in verse 2, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand. And sure enough, Judah then says to Simeon, let's go. And what we read about then from 4 through 10 are the successes of Judah in what they were doing. There's no comment made to show God's mind, and I would very much hesitate to say I know God's mind when he doesn't declare it. It makes me wonder with what they did to Adoni-Bezek when he fled, because they cut off his thumb and his big toes. That just doesn't sound like the kind of thing that God had directed them to do. But nonetheless, they did it, and the king himself, Adoni-Bezek, said, this seems just. This is what I used to do to people that we captured, and they would sit around under my table trying to get scraps when they fell. And so that's what was done. They took him to Jerusalem, and he died there. When they took him to Jerusalem, they had not yet captured Jerusalem, because that's the next thing. Verse 8, the sons of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it. They struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And maybe that's how he died in Jerusalem. I don't know. It doesn't say that here, but it could be. And afterwards, they went down to fight against the Canaanites in the hill country and in the Negev and in the lowland. And so they went down against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron, and which, of course, is the area that Caleb's at, and they struck Sheshai and Ahiman and Talmai. So that's what they were doing, and that's how things get started on a good foot with Judah going out and being successful, is they started out with this inquiry of the Lord and listened to the Lord's direction. Let's continue reading verses 11 through 26. Then from there he went against the inhabitants of Debir. Now the name of Debir formerly was Kirjath Sefer. And Caleb said, and we get this story again, and we've read it before, and I'm not going to go into it. I'm going to skip what happened with Caleb and his daughter and his new son-in-law and the giving of the springs. Go down to verse 16. The descendants of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up from the city of Palms with the sons of Judah to the wilderness of Judah, which is in the south of Arad, and they went and lived with the people. Then Judah went with Simeon, his brother, and they struck the Canaanites living in Zephath and utterly destroyed it. So the name of the city was called Hormah. And Judah took Gaza with its territory, with Ashkelon and with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. Now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country. But they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had iron chariots. Then they gave Hebron to Caleb, as Moses had promised, and he drove out from there the three sons of Anak. But the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem, So the Jebusites have lived with the sons of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. And that's some of the backstory about what's going on. Judah is having this success. He's going from place to place and defeating people. They even went down and did some of the preliminary work for Caleb. Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak. And then it goes on and tells us that Benjamin, though, was unable to drive out the people in Jerusalem. And so Jerusalem, up to the time of the writing of the book of Judges, was still inhabited by the Jebusites in some form. Even though the city had been burned, they were back and they had kept it. Questions, comments? Let's read 22 through 26. Likewise, the house of Joseph went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them. The house of Joseph spied out Bethel. Now the name of the city was formerly Luz. The spies saw a man coming out of the city, and they said to him, "Please show us the entrance to the city, and we will treat you kindly." So he showed them the entrance to the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword, but they let the man and all of his family go free. The man went into the land of the Hittites and built a city and named it Luz, which is its name to this day. So here's the house of Joseph. Who's the house of Joseph? That's Manasseh and Ephraim. And they go up against Bethel, and it says, and the Lord was with them. I don't see an inquiry there, but God is definitely with them and supporting them in what they're doing, leading them into it. The house of Joseph, they spied out Bethel. That was formerly Luz. And they see a man coming out. They ask for directions. If you do that, we're going to treat you well. He gives them the directions. So they let him and his family go. And they go into the city and they, quote, struck it with the edge of the sword. We know what that means. They let the man and his family go free. The man went into the Hittites and built a city and named it what? Luz. He kept the name of the town that was destroyed previously. So we're seeing successes. They're God's with them. They're doing well. Now let's start in verse 27. I'll probably read through the end of the chapter. But Manasseh did not take possession of Bethshean and its villages, or Taanach and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. So the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. It came about that when Israel became strong that they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who were living in Gezer, so the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron, or the inhabitants of Nahoth, I can't say it. So the Canaanites lived among them and became subject to forced labor. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akko, or the inhabitants of Sidon, or Ha'alab, or Achzib, or of Helbah, or of Aphik, or of Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, or the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, and the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath became forced labor for them. So the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, we read that, and they did not allow them to come down to the valley. Yet the Amorites persisted in living in Mount Heres, in Ajalon and in Shalbim, and when the power of the house of Joseph grew strong, they became forced labor. The border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of the Akrabim, from Selah and upward. Oh my, that's a long list. That's a long list of not driving out the people. And one of the statements that's made multiple times in there, that as the Israelite tribe would grow stronger, they would subdue them into slavery. But they didn't drive them out. And it makes it sound like if you can make them into slaves, you ought to be able to drive at least some of them out. I can see where if you have enough slaves, they might rise up against you if you look at this from human terms. But one of the, there's a couple of things you don't see in here. One is you don't see it saying, and God was with them. The other thing you don't see them saying is, God, why can't we drive him out? Lord, give us direction. Lord, lead us. But they're out there and they're taking a different path. And far be it from me to pretend that I know the motives of the people, but certainly a couple of potential things are, we're tired of war. People get tired of war. Another thing that is a potential is, we don't have to work as hard as we would have if we didn't have slaves. And so that is happening. And who knows what other things are going on with regard to interaction with these people. What did God warn them would happen if they didn't drive out the people? You remember? You're going to make friends with them, and you're going to be following their gods. They're going to lead you into rebellion against me. So what can we plan on happening to these tribes? They're going to be led into rebellion against God from the very people they're enslaving. I want to read just the first five verses of Judges 2. I won't make comment because I don't have time. But this is what follows their failure to drive out the people. Now the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim. And he said, I brought you up out of Egypt. I led you into the land which I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars. But you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done? Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. When the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, all the people lift up their voices and wept. So they named that place Bochim, and there they sacrificed to the Lord. We don't have to wonder if their failure was okay with God because it was hard. God made it clear. And God reminds them of what he told them. I said I wouldn't make comments, but I got to make a couple. And doesn't this remind us of what happens when we compromise the standards and words of God? Another comment by God is pride goes before the fall. There's an awful lot of pride in the nation we live in. There's also a lot of compromise of God's standards and rebellion against his words in this nation. I'm not pretending that I am one that can come to you and preach to you that I know what God's going to do. But I think all of us as believers should be very careful about our own lives. Know that God never tells lies. And he always judges the nations that don't follow him. So, watch out. Have a good morning.